Thank you. I asked my kids to cheer when that happened, but apparently they missed the cue. I don't even see them, so. Well, my wife and I have been at Village for about a year or so, and so I didn't know about the camping trip. John asked me if I'd preach this weekend, and then like the next week, they announced the camping trip. So it's like, what's up with that? I guess he thought, well, he's new enough that he won't know to say no. But anyway, so I thought about it, and I actually was kind of happy that I was here on this weekend, because I was reading in the Bible and I noticed that Moses always met God outside the camp. So it's good for us to be outside the camp. So in the first service, I realized that my sermon's a little short. So I think we'll take like 5 minutes and just kind of get our hearts ready to hear the word of God. And that way I'll be on time. Well, maybe not. Okay, let's look at our text. It's Luke chapter 15. Jesus said, "A man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me.' So the father divided his wealth between his sons. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed the swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I'm here dying with hunger? I will get up and I will go to my father and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men.' So he got up and he came to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to his father, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf. Kill it, and let's eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, and he has come to life again. He was lost and has been found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field. And when he came and he approached the house, he heard the music and the dancing. And he summoned one of the servants, and he began inquiring what things could be. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come home, and your father killed the fatted calf because he has received him back safe and sound.' But he became angry, and he was not willing to go in. And his father came out and began pleading with him. But he answered and said to his father, 'Look, for so many years I've been serving you, and I've never neglected a command of yours, and yet you've never even given me a young goat so that I might go celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came home, who devoured your wealth with prostitutes, and you killed the fattened calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you've always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, for this brother of yours was dead, and he has begun to live. He was lost, and now he is found.'" So Jesus tells a story. A man had two sons. It's the way the story begins. Both of the sons live in the father's house, but there's something about living in the house that the younger son didn't like. It didn't suit him. And Jesus doesn't tell us why. Maybe he was tired of cleaning his room, or maybe he was sick of sweeping or loading the dishwasher or whatever it could have been. But the younger son comes to his father and he says, "I want to be on my own. I want to take everything that you have for me, and I want to go someplace else. And so he gathers all of his stuff, and he heads out the door away from the father. It's the way the story begins. It's the way our story begins. It begins with people connected to God. And whether you talk about the Garden of Eden, where out of the dust God makes man and woman, and from his nostrils he breathes life into them, or whether it's in our mother's womb, where God faithfully knits us together, we are deeply connected to a God who loves us. We are deeply connected with God the Father, who does not want to be disconnected from us. That's the story of humanity. And the story of humanity is that at some point we gather up all of our stuff and we go to God and we say to God, I want to do this on my own. I appreciate all that you have for me. I don't like it. I don't like this life. I prefer to go my own way. And so we head out the door to do as we please, away from God, away from the Father. And it's kind of hard to imagine what we really think is out there. But there's some glittering light that draws us, some flame that draws the moth in. It's like children following a ball out into the street. So the boy follows his ball into the street. He goes and he does whatever he pleases. And Jesus says he squanders his wealth in loose living. Jesus calls it madness. It's wasteful. It's foolishness. That's the word that Jesus uses. It's a life wasted. It's wealth squandered. And the money dries up and the friends go away and he's just left empty. Doing things his way is not as glamorous as he thought it might be. He ends up slopping pigs. He ends up eating their food because he's so hungry. Now, as a Jew, it's hard to imagine anything being as demeaning as working with pigs, because pigs were the epitome. They were the top of uncleanness, and they were the pinnacle of separation from God. And to work with them, to eat with them, they're pigs. Pigs. He did things his own way. And now he's sunk just about as deep as he can go. Probably about knee deep. So that's the story of the prodigal. It's our story. From the garden, we left to find things on our own. We chose to pursue life by our own great knowledge. And look around, see how well we've done. You just look around our community and the communities that our church is involved in and involved in trying to make right. We're busy trying to feed hungry children and help immigrants who are ignored in our country and in our society. And we try to help people who are fighting addiction. And we go to the Barnes School to help the teachers get ready for the students. The list goes on and on and on of places where we are trying desperately hard. And we work tirelessly to help our communities. But our communities are coming apart at the seams. Look at Ferguson, Missouri. What a mess. Doing things on our own is not that glamorous. And we end up slopping pigs. It's the story of the prodigal. It's our story. It's the story of humanity. There's not much point in belaboring our fall from grace. We're really confronted with it at every turn. Every dark corner of this beautiful world is full of the evidence of our own emptiness. It echoes in our ears. Well, at that point, our story makes an interesting twist. Look at verse 17. Jesus answered and said, back on this other page, back in chapter 15, you remember. Verse 17, When he came to his senses, and he said, "How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread? But I'm dying here with hunger. I'll get up, I'll go to my father, I'll say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men.' And so he got up and he came to his father." So here's the turning point for all of humanity. It's the point at which, it's the point where we look at where we are and we look at where God is and we say, "I'd rather be there than here." That's the point. I would rather serve in the Father's house than slop these pigs. I would rather trust God with my life than keep pursuing the emptiness on my own. And it's a beautiful story from there, because the prodigal goes home, the son goes home, he's welcomed into his father's house, the father throws a party for his son. Welcome home. Welcome home. The father is thrilled that his son, who was lost, is now found, who was dead, is now alive. The son who left to find his own way has returned. And guess what? Now he wants to be in the father's house. That's our story. That's where we are. That Jesus has helped us to find our way home. Through Jesus, we have found our way home. Through Jesus, we hear God say, we hear the Father say, "Welcome home." It's a beautiful story. It ends with a party in the Father's house. It ends with us finding our home in God. And the wrongs that we live with here in our world and in our society will all be made right in God's house. And indeed, we're even seeing them being made right among us, and some of us here today are even swaying from the music of the party that's going on. It's a beautiful story. But there's another story here. There's another brother. And this brother, this second brother, the older brother, is outside of his father's household. He's stuck close to the house while the younger brother went out and went wild. And we don't know what he did while he was there. We don't know what the brother did while his brother was out slopping pigs. What we see, however, is right now he's outside and he's looking in. And what we see is that while he's outside and looking in, he does not want to go into the party. He's stayed close to the father's house all of his life, but when the party begins, he would rather stay outside than go in. He's angry. Whenever the father comes out, he chooses to argue with the father. He's angry at who the father has brought into the party. He can't believe, "This is a party for my brother? Are you kidding me? If the father is going to run the household like this, this is not the kind of household that I want to be a part of." And so he wants to do his own thing. Does that sound familiar? And then Jesus ends the story. It just stops. And in ending the story there, I have a feeling that Jesus intends for us to try and figure out, where does this story go? Where does it continue? You see, so we have two sons, and both of them ultimately separate them from the father's household. Both of them decide, "I want to go my own way." One of them goes to the far country. One of them just goes outside of the house. That's it. Both outside. We have two prodigals. Not one, two prodigals. One decides to return. The father welcomes him with open arms. And we don't know what the other's going to do, right? So here's the question. Here's the question. Why would anyone want to skip the party? Why would anyone not want to come back into the household of God? I mean, let that one sink in for a second. Why would you want to skip the party? I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure there are some people out there who would rather pursue their own way than God's way. Maybe you've noticed. Now, sometimes those people have not reached their point of turning. You know what I mean? I mean, not all prodigals have run out of money yet. Not all of them have gotten to the to the point where they see their empty life. Not all of them have begun looking for real hope. And I'm not talking about those people because, honestly, I'm not sure we've got a lot to say to them. I say let's just give them a little more time because the money will run out. Okay? We give them a little more time and they'll get to that point. Let's just see what happens there. But there are other people. There are people who know everything about the party, but they'd rather stay outside of the party and do their own thing. Those are the ones that I'm interested in. They refuse to join the party. Now, some of them, I think, just prefer their own sin. Their tastes have changed. Been on a diet for a number of months. It's really not that much fun. When I first began, you know, the diet that I'm on, you have these little prepackaged meal things. And at first, the food tasted terrible. I mean, it was really awful. But now I don't mind it so much. And it's because my tastes have changed. But what if at some point I thought the food that I'm now eating was better than a filet at the Father's table? What if I might just actually skip the filet and eat the reconstituted soy meat product? Right? Some people, their tastes have changed, and they live their life, and they look at their life, and they look at God's party, and they're like, yeah, you know what? I like soy. Pass the tofu. You know, they would intentionally choose to slop the pigs for a little bit longer. They're like, hey, you know, I like the party. Sounds good. I think I'm going to do this. They're going to press into the emptiness a little bit longer that maybe it's going to break free and be something better later. They're hoping for something. They're like, thank you for the party. No thanks. I'm going to continue on my way. After all, after you've been calling the shots for a while, it's pretty hard to go back. Remember whenever you left home, went to college, came back for the summer? It's like, oh, never again, right? Because whenever you come back into the Father's house, you're going to have to live under his authority. When you come and you join God's party, you have to live in a way that honors God. You have to pursue his way. It's the whole denying yourself and taking up a cross and following Jesus. That's the party. That's what it is. And so some prodigals pass on the party because it's like, you know what? I like my own sin better. But some people, they come to the party and they look around and they see people there that they don't want, that they don't think ought to be there. Some people size up the prodigals at the party and they decide, I'd just rather not hang out with those people. They'd rather stay outside on the road, apart from God, apart from the party, apart from the Father, than with those prodigals. I don't want to be there. If that party has a bunch of whores, I don't want to be there. If there's a bunch of drunks, a bunch of swindlers, a bunch of liars, I don't want to be a part of that kind of a party. And it amounts to this, and listen very carefully because it's no different than the prodigal. They say, I don't want this way of God. I want my own way. And I'll skip the party if it has those kinds of people there because I wouldn't want to follow a God who likes those people anyway. And so they stay out of the party. Now there's other people, I think, who they look at the party and they look at God and they decide, you know what? They're looking at God himself and they decide, I don't think I want to be at his party. I mean, they have a whole list of things that they don't like about God. You know, how could God let my wife have a brain tumor that's debilitating? You know, what kind of God would stand around while his people starve? You know, why doesn't God just deal with the evil people? I mean, come on, God. There are Christians who are being beheaded by ISIS right now. God, I don't know that I want to be at a party for a God who sees all of that and does nothing about it? What about, you know, unless God can explain all of the genocide in the Old Testament, I just don't think I like him, and I don't think I want to be at that kind of a party. Some people just can't see beyond the things that are very hard to understand to sit down at God's table. And so they stay out. They say, no thanks, not going to that party. Now, standing out on the road, standing outside, doesn't mean you can't have a party, right? I mean, so not everybody who doesn't go to God's party are without parties, okay? Some people have their own parties. They think they can make their own party and pretend it's God's party. It's a little bit like Weekend at Bernie's. And it's an old movie where these people, they go to this party, this guy's house for the weekend, and he dies right off the bat. And they're like, hey, we really wanted to have a weekend, and this is kind of a bummer. We don't want all of his neighbors to know he died. It'll ruin the whole weekend. So instead, they just put sunglasses and a hat on him. They take him out on the boat and go skiing. They do everything to make everybody else think that Bernie is alive and a part of the party, but he's really not, because he's dead. So some people kind of make their own party and just pretend that it's God's party. They prop their idea of God up in the corner and they say, see, this is God's party. It's like Weekend at Bernie's. Some people just invent a God out of whole cloth who would be at their party. They invent unloving gods that love them and hate everybody else. They say, well, he can come to my party. See, this is a God party. They invent mechanical gods that they can manipulate. You know, if I put in these things in, these things come out. That's my God. That's my party. Come join my party. They invent gods that look just like them. They say, if you look like me, you can come to my party. Some people even build large congregations. They have big parties. They condemn everybody else outside of their own party. They mock the real party as if it's not real. I attended a church one time for a while that everyone was all smiles and hugs for people who were their own. But let somebody come in who wasn't up on their doctrines. Let somebody come in who hadn't gotten their moral life put together. And then you would feel their wrath. And they took joy out of telling people that they were going to hell. And they dusted off their jackets and they compared themselves to the rest of the world. And they were pretty proud that they'd found their own way. And God was this great big club that they beat people with. Anybody who was different than themselves. They had a party. They had their party. They had God propped up. They had Bernie in the corner. But their party was as empty as a pigsty. But they would rather run their own party than actually go to the one that God is throwing. Because they thought, my party's better. Now listen, I don't know. I won't pretend to know all of the reasons that people don't want to go to the party. But I know this. I know that everybody who goes to the party is going to be uncomfortable. I know that. Because when you go to the party, it means that you give up your own way. When you go to the party, it means that you have to let God throw the party that God is throwing, and you have to be a part of that party. It means that I can guarantee you are not going to like everything at the party. It's just the way it is. It means that you have to give up your ideas of what the party will be and what it should be, and you have to be at God's party. Guess what? It's not your party. It's God's party. And he gets to invite whomever he wants. And if he invites Methodists, and you're a Baptist, it's his party. If he invites homosexuals and you think he shouldn't, it's his party. If he invites conservatives and you think you're a progressive, it's his party. If he invites liberals to his party and you're a conservative, it's God's party. If he invites your enemies to come to his party, it's his party. If he invites those you don't like, those you don't agree with, those that you argue with, whatever, it's his party. If he invites Catholics, if he invites Mormons, if he invites Buddhists, if he invites anyone he invites, it's God's party. It's his party. He can invite whomever he wants. But the question is, what would it take to keep you from going to God's party? Are there people that if they're at the party, you're not going? You know, I would rather miss the party than sit at the table with that guy if you only knew what he did to me. If God does, surely God knows my ex-wife and he knows what's in her heart. I certainly do. I wouldn't go to a party with her. I wouldn't go to a party that included her. Are there people who would not, who would keep you from going to God's party? What would it take? What is it that would keep you from going to? Are there theologies that would keep you from going to God's party? If God isn't like I think he should be, I'm not going to that party. What if God is more conservative than you are? Are you going to that party? What if he's more progressive than you are? Are you going to that party? What if God is more like the charismatics think he is? Would that keep you from going to the party? What if God is actually more like the Methodists think he, maybe what if he's not in this kind of Calvinistic model, but what if God himself is actually a Methodist? Just for the record, I don't think he is, but this is no. Would that keep you from going to the party? What if the things that I think are most important about God turn out to not be right? Is that enough to keep me out of the party? If it's that way, would I stay home from the party? What is it that would keep you from going to God's party? Are there sins, indiscretions you don't want to give up, power you want to hang on to? What is it that would keep you from going to God's party? Are there ideas that you have that you don't want to walk away from? Is there something that you love in your own way that would keep you from going to God's party? Is there something that you hold on to that you would choose, that you would keep, rather than going to God's party? Is there some emptiness in your life that you want to pursue more than the fullness of God's party? Are there pigs that you need to slop? Do you have a really, really good reason where at the end of that right now, it's just burning on your brain. At the end of the sermon, I'm going to go up and I'm going to tell Derek, here's the reason I'm not going to the party. And it's a really good reason. Do you have that? Because all of us have to choose. Because it's our way or it's God's way. It's our party or it's God's party. It's our life or it's his life. That's it. I'm done. I should go. Because I have an invitation to a party, and I don't plan to miss it.